Hello and a glorious May welcome to today's edition of Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynmouth area talking newspaper, with today being the turn of the Red Team to bring you the latest news from our region, recorded at our Dawlish studio on Friday the 1st of May 2026. May Day, according to my research, is a European festival that dates back nearly 1,000 years, and it marks the beginning of summer, halfway between the spring equinox and summer solstice. People around the country have been up since the crack of dawn to celebrate May Day with maypole dancing, Morris dancing, and the crowning of May Queens. I'm John Townsend, leading our team of Merry May volunteers, some doubtless up before dawn, as is the custom, to wash faces in sparkling dew before the gathering of May blossom, maybe under tonight's full moon. I'm joined by 4 other readers this week, and as usual, I'll conclude with entertainment on offer at the Shaftesbury Theatre Dawlish and Pavilions Tynmouth, plus other events for the start of May. So, with the latest news stories at hand, let's take a look at this week's front pages. Both the Dawlish Gazette and the Tynmouth Post have the same main headline. Oh dear, what can the matter be? With a follow-up, the CCTV caused a storm in the lavatory. So it looks as if we have a toilet controversy in our midst. So do tell us more, Mary, at your convenience, of course.
Thank you, John. Well, the headline is controversial CCTV removed from toilets. Councillors in Tynmouth have agreed to remove some of the controversial CCTV cameras in its new toilet block following public outrage. The decision to take out cameras from the accessible toilets is a partial climb down following the backlash against the cameras, which were pointed to record inside cubicles unless the door was fully shut. Angry toilet users said the use was a breach of privacy and a safeguarding risk for children using the loos. The cameras stopped recording when the cubicle door closed, but parents of disabled users argued there were times when they had to keep the door open. Now, Tynmouth Town Council says, in response to feedback from the public, it has reconsidered. In a statement, the council said it has listened carefully to feedback from the public regarding privacy concerns in our new gender-neutral toilet block. A spokesman said, in response, we have taken decisive action and removed the CCTV cameras from the accessible toilet to ensure the highest respect for individual privacy. As previously reported, the issue came to light after a mother of 2 took both her children to use the accessible toilets at the newly opened block on the Den and discovered, having left the door ajar, that the camera above was on. The council, which is spending £1.5 million upgrading the town's toilets, said the cameras were needed to tackle repeated vandalism, which has been costing the authority £10,000 a year in repairs. The new block on the Den has a total of 22 cameras, which many argue is excessive. Although some users agreed cameras could be needed to deter and identify vandals, there are continuous concerns over who has access to any footage. However, it was not until the camera function was highlighted by the concerned mother that many were even aware that the cameras were recording inside the cubicles. The revelation sparked fierce criticism, with many people insisting they will refuse to use the new toilets, which cost 40p a time. The town council continued, while these cameras were never able to film inside stalls when doors were closed, we fully recognise and understand the concerns raised by members of our community. We are committed to balancing privacy with the need for safety. We have, however, retained cameras in the hallways. These play a pivotal role in tackling persistent issues of vandalism and drug use. Unfortunately, repeated incidents of this nature have previously forced us to close the toilets, costing the council thousands of pounds and leaving the public without essential facilities. These are real challenges we must address to keep our toilets open and safe for everyone. We want to reassure the community that all CCTV systems are carefully positioned to enhance safety while maintaining respect for personal privacy. Our aim is to provide a welcoming, secure environment for all users, and we will continue to review our approach to light of ongoing feedback.
Hello, it's Anne here. My first article is Decorative Lights Return to Dawlish. Dawlish has got its spark back with the switching on of the first of its new decorative illuminations. The town, famed for its lights along the Brook Waterway, has been in darkness for 3 years after storms wrecked the previous illuminations. Now the first part of a lengthy project to restore the town's glow is lit up. The Dawlish Illumination Bridge is now shining brightly with more of the brook lights to return in the near future. A spokesman for Dawlish Town Council, which is behind the restoration, said, "The newly lit Dawlish Illumination Bridge is looking absolutely fantastic. This is just the beginning of an exciting Town Council project to bring the brook lights back into operation. It's wonderful to see this much-loved area shining brightly once again." Residents have been delighted with the results. Historian David Force said, "Brilliant to see Dawlish lighting up once more, ready for the summer season. Damaged beyond repair in 2023 during severe storms, the brook has been without its illuminations ever since. The Town Council has been working with the Environment Agency to ensure permissions were in place for work to start. The multicoloured lighting was a traditional feature of the town centre. Town councillors have been working behind the scenes on the members of the Town Council's Civic Amenities Committee to ensure the return of the popular decorative lighting, choosing the style of lighting in a string format and moving in multiple colours. The waterway has been in the dark since the 2023 storms, and there had been many calls for their return. The Town Council was involved in lengthy negotiations with insurers who took some time to resolve the claim. Money was earmarked in the 2024 to 2025 budget for the replacements, which are remote and manual controlled LED lighting. The new look is a complete redesign aimed at reducing the chance of damage in the future.
Hi, this is Sarah. My first story is titled Royal Visitor for Devon County Show. The Duchess of Edinburgh will be attending the opening day of the Devon County Show this month. Her Royal Highness's visit on May 21st will be a particularly meaningful moment for the county's farming community. The 2026 show will serve as the first major opportunity of the year for farmers, producers, rural businesses and volunteers to come together, reconnect and celebrate the resilience and spirit that define Devon's countryside. The Duchess's attendance highlights the importance of the event as a gathering place for rural communities and a showcase of the innovation, skill and dedication that underpin Devon's agricultural landscape. His Majesty the King is patron of the Devon County Show, continuing a long tradition of royal support for the county's agricultural heritage. During her visit, Her Royal Highness will tour the showground, meeting exhibitors, young farmers, volunteers and representatives from across the agricultural and rural sectors. John Lee OBE, DL, President of the Devon County Show 2026, said, "We are deeply honoured to welcome Her Royal Highness to the Devon County Show. After such a tough winter for so many in our farming community, her visit will mean so much. The show has always been a place where people come together to support one another, to share knowledge and to celebrate the very best of Devon's rural life. Her presence will add a tremendous sense of pride and occasion to this year's event." Devon County Council Chief Executive and Show Manager Lisa Moore added, "The Duchess's attendance is a wonderful recognition of the dedication and resilience shown by our rural communities. We are thrilled to welcome her and to showcase the people, projects and innovations that make the Devon County Show such a special part of the county's identity." The show runs at West Point near Exeter from May 21st to 23rd.
Tynmouth Pride needs local support. Organisers of Tynmouth's annual Pride event are appealing for support. Over the last 3 years, Tynmouth Pride has received funding from the National Lottery and a decision is awaited for this year. So far, lottery cash has been the backbone of keeping the event afloat. But organisers are realistic to know that this funding cannot always be guaranteed. Now they are hoping the community can get behind the festival, which this year takes place from September the 4th to the 6th. A spokesman said, "We know that we cannot always guarantee on the support of the National Lottery, but we do hope that we have the support of businesses in town. If you believe Tynmouth Pride is important to the local community as a whole, please consider helping to keep the event going. Tynmouth Pride is our version of a community-based event that is for everyone to be part of, that welcomes everyone and is for everyone to enjoy. It brings people into the town and is a perfect opportunity for businesses to get involved and embrace the weekend, and also to support the weekend. It is a two-way street. A registered charity run by volunteers, the organisers have as one of their own core values that the event should always be free to attend. This means everything is funding from sponsorship, stall fees, donations and community fundraising." The spokesman continued, "Without the generosity and engagement from our community, we cannot exist. We work very hard to get this event on each year. However, we can only do so with so much, and without the support from the people and businesses of Tynmouth, then there is a danger the event cannot continue. The costs for stages, security, insurance and acts are rising, and we refuse to compromise on making this a safe, high-quality event for Tynmouth. Let's make sure 2026 still happens, bigger and better than ever. Anyone who can help, contact tynmouthpride@gmail.com.
Seawall footpath reopens ahead of schedule. The footpath along Dawlish Seawall has now fully reopened a week ahead of schedule. The path was battered by two consecutive storms in February, which also left a void at Spray Point in Tynmouth and a sinkhole at Buddy's Cafe. Repair work has been ongoing by engineers working for Network Rail. A spokesman said, "We have a small amount of work left to do, but this can be safely completed while the footpath is in use. Thanks for your patience while we carried out the extensive repairs." Repairs to the storm damage have taken several months, and contractors were faced with working in poor, wet weather conditions along with high tides. Buddy's at Red Rock Cafe reopened earlier this month after the huge sinkhole was repaired, while the owners then carried out work on the building and outside decking.
Former church goes under the hammer. A former Tynmouth church is to go under the hammer. Tynmouth United Reformed Church in Dawlish Street closed in 2024 but is now on the market and due to go for auction next month. The Grade 2 listed building is on a prominent site in the town and has a guide price for the May 7th auction of £100,000. The Methodist congregation became the Lighthouse Pioneer Church, which now meets at the Tynmouth Hub. It is understood the building required substantial investment for the church to make it fit for purpose. Auctioneers Clive Emerson said the sale is an opportunity to breathe new life into a prominent former church. Auction appraiser Steve Appleby said, "This is a substantial former church building occupying a highly prominent island position in Tynmouth, close to the town centre, railway station and seafront. It comprises the main church auditorium with gallery, together with adjoining two-storey accommodation formerly used for educational and community purposes, and retains a wealth of character features. It is considered that there may be potential for a variety of future uses, including residential conversion, community use, or redevelopment of the site, subject to all the necessary consents being obtainable." And the article has a lovely picture of the church, which is a big building on the corner.
Charity's new support service for parent carers. An Exminster charity has launched a new service for parents and carers of children with special educational needs, a disability, long-term illness, or additional needs. West Bank Community Health and Care held the official launch event of Devon Parent Carers at its Healthy Living Centre in Exminster, attended by health and social care professionals and some of the people who have helped make the new support service possible. Intrepid community fundraisers John Powell and Andy Green together raised more than £4,000 to support Devon Parent Carers at West Bank. They gave a talk about the mountain of a challenge they undertook, hiking from Everest Base Camp to Island Peak, an ascent of more than 6,000 metres. Among the attendees was Matt Lowe, whose late husband John Hatch left a significant legacy to West Bank, which has also helped fund Devon Parent Carers at West Bank. Organisations that have helped fund the service are Garfield Western Foundation, the Master Charitable Trust, Blackton Charitable Foundation, and the Williamson Charitable Trust. West Bank's dedicated support will include peer support groups, skills workshops, a quarterly e-newsletter, self-help resources, and access to discounted short breaks. Face-to-face groups will meet monthly. The first of these is at West Bank's Coffee on the Corner Cafe in Exminster, where parent carers can meet and chat. West Bank's Head of Carer Services, Andy Hood, introduced the launch event by thanking all those whose contributions are helping to fund the new service. He said Devon Parent Carers will help to fill the gaps between lots of different pieces of legislation, helping to support those looking after under-18s with disabilities or additional needs. West Bank decided a couple of years ago that we wanted to provide a service for parent carers and set about getting the funds to make it happen. We have been very fortunate to have some great organisations and individuals donate to us and provide grants. John Hatch, a former West Bank employee who then volunteered for us years, left a generous legacy in his will, which was very gratefully received. John Powell told the audience why he and his fellow fundraisers, Andy Green, had chosen West Bank to benefit from their fundraising. He said, "I've been working in and around social health and care in Devon for many years now, and I've watched as West Bank has done more incredible, inspiring work. The outcome of what West Bank does are far bigger than the charity, and that's why Andy and I did this. It's a real honour to be involved." Matt Lowe said his late husband, John Hatch, would have been thrilled to know the legacy he left was supporting such a vital service. He said John's mother had dementia. He cared for her for about 20 years and understood the support that West Bank's carer services provides. When he stopped working for West Bank, he volunteered as an ambassador for Devon Carers because he understood the need to support unseen carers who can feel very isolated and alone. Sadly, John died of bowel cancer. This service really fits his ethos of helping and supporting people who are caring for others. He'd be thrilled. For more information about Devon Parent Carers, visit www.westbank.org.uk, Devon Parent Carers.
Giant transformer causes a spectacle. A huge transformer, which was landed at Timberport, has now reached its final destination at a national grid substation near Exeter. The 150-ton equipment, the equivalent weight to 25 African elephants, was brought in through ABP Port of Timmouth and attracted much attention from residents as it slowly made its way out of the port gates and up Exeter Road. Movement of the massive piece of equipment took place overnight when it was carefully transported along the 23-mile journey from Timmouth to the substation site near the village of Broadclist. When installed, the vital new equipment will help boost the resilience and capacity of the electricity transmission network across the southwest, supporting homes and businesses for years to come. The delivery marks a major milestone in National Grid's ongoing upgrade to its Exeter substation, helping to ensure the network remains reliable as electricity demand continues to grow. The delivery was carried out by specialist hauliers under police escort, with traffic management measures in place to minimise disruption. National Grid worked closely with local and highways authorities and the police, ensuring the movement was safely completed with minimal disturbance to the local community. Transformers are essential pieces of substation equipment which help to manage voltage so that electricity can be safely and efficiently transmitted and distributed around the country. This particular unit is a static compensator transformer, SCT, which plays a key role in keeping the electricity network's voltage steady and stable to ensure a reliable supply of power for local homes and businesses. Ongoing upgrade works at the substation will also see the delivery and installation of a second new transformer, both units replacing equipment that is nearing the end of its operational life. The work forms part of National Grid's long-term investment to future-proof the electricity transmission network in the southwest. Jacob DeMuth, project manager at National Grid, said, "Moving equipment of this size is safely and efficiently is a real team effort. We've worked closely with Devon County Council, National Highways, police and our specialist haulage partners to carefully plan and complete the delivery with minimal disruption to road users and the local community. The new unit at Exeter Substation will help ensure resilience and future stability on the network across the southwest and will support growing energy demands. We'd like to thank our partners and the community for supporting us while we carried out this important work." Councillor Dan Thomas, Devon County Council Cabinet Member for Highways, said, "This move has been a massive logistical operation on behalf of all the partners involved. Devon County Council has been involved in helping plan the route for more than 4 years. Our teams carried out a huge amount of work, assessing the load-carrying capacity of structures on the route and ensuring adequate width for the convoy by temporarily removing bollards, streetlights, lamp columns and signs, all of which will now be put back in place. On-street parking restrictions were also temporarily suspended on specific sections of the route. Throughout all of the planning process and the transportation of the transformer itself, public safety has been paramount." And there's a picture here of this amazing sight of this very long transformer being transported. It must have been quite something to see it.
Man's 100-mile walk for tumour charity. A local man is set to embark on a walk of close to 100 miles for a charity close to his heart. Simon Vickery is preparing to walk the West Highland Way in support of brain tumour research. The West Highland Way is close to 100 miles long. "I intend to leave Milngavie on May 17th and hopefully arrive in Fort William 6 days and 96 miles later," Simon said. "The route offers diverse scenery from the shores of Loch Lomond to Highland Mountains. During the years our children were growing up, my wife and I were aware of a number of children affected by brain tumours. Some years later, my son-in-law had to deal with two tumours in close succession. Thankfully, he beat them both. And more recently, a very dear friend developed a brain tumour that sadly resulted in her death. I do not think, over my 66 years of life, I can think of another disease that has affected me more. Brain tumours kill more children and adults under the age of 40 than any other cancer. Just 1% of the national spend on cancer research has been allocated to the disease. Brain tumour research is a leading voice calling for support and action for research into what is called the last battleground against cancer. And you can support Simon by visiting the Just Giving website and searching for his name, Simon Vickery, and there's a lovely photo of him here on the grass with his dog.
Lido prepares for summer amid takeover. Preparations are well underway for the opening of Tynmouth Lido for the summer. Despite Teignbridge Council looking to keep the pool closed this year to save cash, leading councillors agreed to a U-turn for this year, while efforts are made for volunteers to take it over. Now Teignbridge Leisure staff say the water is looking much cleaner. The pool, however, is working overtime to remove debris from the bottom of the pool. A spokesman for Teignbridge Leisure said, the pool is also being treated with chlorine in preparation for the pumps to be switched on next week. All the volunteers involved have been thanked for their efforts to get the Lido ready for the opening. Recruitment of lifeguards is well underway. No opening date has been confirmed yet. Meanwhile, the Save the Lido group, which is bidding to take over the pool, has now achieved charity status. Trustees have developed some merchandise available to buy to support funding efforts to acquire the Lido. Trustee Daniel O'Connell said, we have had a trustee successfully travel hundreds of miles to retrain as a lifeguard and also as a lifeguard trainer, ready for when we hope to get the green light to train as many as possible. Teignbridge Council is working hard on getting ready to operate as normal this season, and we thank them for that. Regular meetings are being held to facilitate our hopes of successfully bidding to acquire the Lido for the community and to present the best possible business plan. A reminder that all the trustees are volunteers. We aim to achieve our goals and keep the Lido open for the benefit of everyone for years to come. And there's a lovely photograph of one of the volunteers, Catherine, by the Lido, getting the pool ready, and the water is looking a lovely blue.
Money raised to help rebuild 200-year-old cottage. A fundraising campaign to help an Exminster family whose 200-year-old home came crashing down has raised almost £9,000. Weeks after the gable end of Cobb-built Orchard Cottage collapsed, owner Sally Williams has thanked everyone who supported her and her family. Donations have been spent on securing the property, scaffolding, securing the site, architects, surveyors, engineers, and fees to reinstate the wall. Sally says she is truly grateful to her friend Elaine Bowler for arranging the fundraising page and those who donated. She has lived in the cottage for 25 years this month. Sally explained, during that time, the cottage has seen considerable investment and transformation, with money spent on updating the electrics, plumbing, extending, replacing the kitchen and bathroom, decorating and gardening. In February, after the wettest winter recorded in Devon since 1903, we faced the challenge of the collapse of the gable end. The 200-year-old cob had soaked up as much moisture as it could bear, and the exterior wall gave way, making the house suddenly much more draughty. The last few weeks have been filled with visits from engineers, cob experts, surveyors, builders and architects to establish the cause of the collapse and work out the best way of reinstating and rebuilding. How lucky that we're surrounded by so many talented people in Exminster. However, she is also facing a battle with insurers who refused her claim due to various reasons, including the damage was not during a named storm and the wind speed was not in excess of 55 miles an hour. But she has lodged complaints and appealed the decision. She said, I'm so grateful my family and I weren't physically hurt when the wall came down, although the emotional toll has been rather heavy. I'm also grateful for the overwhelming support from family, friends, neighbours, our amazing community, and even complete strangers who have come forward with offers of shelter, food, skills, time, expertise, and financial support. Thank you all.
I have one short piece here, the death of Councillor James Richard Michael. After a wonderful life, Mike passed away on the 1st of April 2026 at the age of 94. Husband and close partner to Diana, stepfather to stepson David. Funeral service to be held at St Agatha's Church, Dawlish, on Monday 11th of May at 3 p.m. Family flowers only. Donations if desired to Hector's House Cat Rescue by Retiring Collection or to Christopher's Family Funerals, TQ12, 2SL.
We're now joined by David, and I think your first story, David, is quite an upbeat, feel-good story, I hope.
Very much indeed, John, and I'm pleased to be able to read this. Man reunites with ambulance crew on the anniversary of a cardiac arrest. A Tynmouth man has been reunited with a South Western Ambulance Service NHS Foundation Trust crew member who helped to save his life. Peter Grimsey, now 68, collapsed while training in a pool at Dawlish Leisure Centre on April 16, 2025. After the quick actions of trained lifeguards on site and the immediate availability of a defibrillator, Peter received four shocks before ambulance crews arrived. Peter was then given a further three shocks and, once stable, was conveyed to Royal Devon and Exeter Hospital. Peter spent a total of 1 month and 1 day in hospital and underwent extensive hospital assessments. He was diagnosed with non-ischemic cardiomyopathy, a condition affecting the heart muscle and its electrical system, and later received an implantable cardioverter defibrillator, an ICD. Now home and on the road to recovery, 1 year on from his cardiac arrest, Peter hosted what he calls his rebirthday. He returned to Dawlish Leisure Centre for a commemorative swim alongside friends and had the opportunity to be reunited with Emergency Ambulance Associate Colin Shepherd, who was part of the ambulance team that responded to him. Peter said it was fantastic being able to meet Colin today, having the opportunity to be reunited with someone who helped save my life, and that's really special. I've had to recalibrate my life. I can't dive or play underwater hockey anymore, but I'm back swimming with friends and finding new ways to stay active. I've even taken up Tai Chi and picked up my guitar again after 50 years. I would not be here today if it wasn't for Colin, the other ambulance crews and the lifeguards. I am so thankful to them all. Colin Shepherd, the Emergency Ambulance Associate, said, "Situations like Peter's highlight just how critical early intervention is. The presence of trained lifeguards and an accessible defibrillator, and they made all the difference. By the time we arrived, the chain of survival was already well underway, and that gave Peter the best possible chance. Seeing Peter again, healthy and thriving, is exactly why we do this job. It was a pleasure to attend Peter's celebration and get to speak with him under much better circumstances. I wish Peter all the best for the future. Now adjusting to a new way of life, Peter has become a trustee of Tynmouth Lido Community Trust, where he has also completed much of his rehabilitation. Recently, he qualified as a pool lifeguard and completed a trainer assessor course, enabling him to teach future lifeguards. Peter added, "I owe my life to people who were CPR trained and prepared. If I can help train the next generation, then that feels incredibly meaningful." Peter hopes his story will encourage more people to learn life-saving skills and support access to defibrillators in community spaces. And to find out more about free CPR and defibrillator training from the South West Ambulance, there's a website, www.swast.nhs.uk/CPR-and-defibrillator-training. That's quite a mouthful, and I really hope you got that because it's very important.
New rail fencing blocks stunning views. One of the best views in Devon along the railway line at Starcross has been obscured by new fencing. New fence panels have been installed at Starcross Railway Station by Network Rail. But the stunning estuary views, enjoyed by millions, are now blocked by the new design. County Councillor Alan Connett said one of the best views in Devon is being affected by new fencing panels. Network Rail has been working to update the fencing, but local residents are concerned the view just won't be the same and far more sympathetic fencing could have been used, which keeps the view. One resident also pointed out the new design was catching the wind and making quite a noise. They said it was similar to blowing across a bottle top. It would drive me crazy if I lived nearby. Councillor Connett says he is working with MP Martin Wrigley and Team Bridge Councillor Gary Taylor, who represents Starcross, to ask Network Rail to think again about the style of fencing and protect the view for everyone to enjoy. But Network Rail says the fencing has been designed to be more durable and meet modern safety standards. A Network Rail spokesman said, "We understand the concerns raised by local residents, but the fencing at Starcross Station and appreciate how important the area is to the community and visitors. The previous fencing was deteriorating due to its age and needed to be replaced with a fence that could safely withstand crowd pressure, particularly given the high number of people who use the station. While safety signage was installed as a temporary measure, a full renewal was required to maintain passenger safety. The replacement fence has been designed to meet modern safety standards while respecting the character of the station and preserving as much of the view across the estuary as possible. It's the same height and shape as the previous fence, but is stronger, reducing the risk of falls." And there's a photo by Alan Connor of the fencing, and it's a sort of silvery metal with sort of honeycomb-shaped panel in the middle.
And my next article is that a water worker inspires stained glass art. Well, South West Water's presence in Dawlish has been immortalised in a stained glass window. Award-winning stained glass artist Laura Kreifman has created a stunning work of art based on contractor John Cuddy. John is one of the team working for contractors Envolve and Network Plus on the multi-million pound scheme to improve water quality and reduce the use to storm overflows in Dawlish. For 9 months, Laura passed John on her street every day, and every day they said, "Hello." One morning, she spotted John perched high on the gigantic pipeline used in this project. The contrast of his high-vis jacket and orange trousers against the industrial pipework inspired her to create a stained glass portrait of John using vintage glass and hand-painted detail. And there's a lovely picture there of the two of them, and it's hard to decipher which one is the stained glass window and which is John.
Firefighters called to Dawlish Beach campfire. Firefighters from Dawlish were alerted to reports of an unattended fire at Coriton Cove Beach, which turned out to be a campfire dug into the sand. The call to fire control on Saturday, raising the alarm, was made by police. A crew from Dawlish was sent to the scene. Firefighters heading to the beach first on foot to investigate and found the fire was attended by a group of people. A spokesman for Dawlish Fire Station said, "After liaising with people on the beach, it was soon ascertained the group were having a campfire on the beach and that they had dug into the sand. Following safety advice, our crews were happy to leave the scene."
And now there's anger over hospital redundancy offer. MPs in South Devon have called on the Health Secretary to act after the distressing news that Tynemouth Hospital, Torbay Hospital, is offering staff redundancy packages. The move has also led to the resignation of two high-profile local health campaigners from the hospital's Board of Governors. Susie Colley and Sally Aaron Gerard of the Torbay Heart Campaign said they no longer had confidence in local health bodies. The three Liberal Democrat MPs say the cost-cutting voluntary redundancy scheme launched this week by the Torbay and South Devon NHS Foundation Trust is incredibly concerning. The Trust says it faces serious financial pressures and is taking significant steps to deliver savings. It said the majority of its funding was spent on staffing and it needed to reduce costs further. The controversy comes against a backdrop of recent conflict over local health care provision. The Heart Campaign was set up amid fears that emergency cardiac care services could be moved from Torbay to Exeter as part of a gradual downgrading of the Bay's medical facilities. Hundreds of local people attended a recent protest meeting and a fighting fund has been launched to bankroll a legal challenge. The Trust has shelved its controversial early proposals on cardiac care, but retains a 5-year plan which objectors fear will lead to the service being downgraded. A long-standing partnership with Torbay Council to deliver adult social care is also being broken up, which has led to calls for Health Secretary Wes Streeting to step in. A letter signed by MPs Steve Darling, Torbay, Caroline Vodon, South Devon, and Martin Wrigley, Newton Abbott, said that while people had voted at the last election for investment in the NHS, Torbay and the rest of Devon were seeing cuts instead. Costs running to tens of billion pounds were being imposed across the county, it said, with limited democratic accountability. Torbay Hospital clearly needs greater financial assistance, said the letter. The Trust told the BBC the decision to introduce a time-limited voluntary redundancy scheme had not been taken lightly. All applications will be carefully assessed to ensure patient safety and service delivery are not compromised, it said. There is no obligation for anyone to apply, and support is available to all staff.
Fire crews charity car wash success. Firefighters in Tynmouth have raised more than £500 for a charity close to their hearts. The crew from Tynmouth Fire Station raised money for the firefighters' charity on Saturday, April 25th, with their annual car wash. And the crew managed to raise £570, which offers specialist lifelong support for members of the UK Fire Service through the charity. A spokesperson for the station said, "A huge thank you to everyone who came along to our car wash. We really appreciate the generosity from our local community. It was great to see so many of you there." Crews are on hand car washing vehicles at the town station off Exeter Road from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m.
And now let's move on to sport. And first of all, I have football, association football. Spurs and Tynmouth conclude seasons. Newton Abbott Spurs and Tynmouth AFC both concluded their respective SWPL Premier East campaigns with defeats on the road. Spurs were beaten in a 7-goal thriller away at fellow Highflyers Bridport FC on Saturday, April the 25th. Bridport, who were already guaranteed a second-place finish, won 4-3 at St Mary's Field, and not for the first time this season, has Sol Ayunga to thank for it. On the other side, Toby Pullman added 2 more goals to his Spurs tally, but was narrowly beaten to the golden boot by Bobby Trace's Levi Landrikon, for whom the last month or two has been electric. Talking of Bobby, and although the game was supposed to take place at Tynmouth's Coombe Valley, they hosted Liam Jones' side on Thursday and won 4-2. Owen Hanks and Ryan Tressider scored the Tynmouth goals. In the final standings, Newton Spurs are 5th and Teens are 14th. And now let's change code. Let's go to running at the moment. Trotters take on the new fastest marathon. The TCS London Marathon took place on Sunday, April 26, and despite hot conditions for the mass field, it was one of the most extraordinary days in the event's history. 17 Teambridge trotters took to the streets of London. While the heat tested runners throughout the day, the atmosphere was electric, with huge crowds lining the route from Greenwich to the finish on the Mall. Among the club runners, Rachel Steele produced a superb performance, finishing in 3 hours 47 minutes and 45 seconds to secure a good-for-age qualifying time, made all the more impressive as it came just 2 weeks after completing the Dartmoor Marathon. Club member Del Skinner took on the half marathon distance, describing it as very much a game of two halves. He completed the course in a watch time of 2 hours and 4 minutes. Following 2 challenging marathon weekends, Sue Tremlett stayed closer to home on Saturday by taking on a demanding South West Path half marathon, running from Paignton to Shoreditch. Conditions on the day added to the challenge, with hot weather making an already hilly course feel even tougher. Despite this, Sue completed the route in 3 hours and 40 minutes. The Manchester Marathon once again lived up to its reputation as one of the UK's standout road races, attracting over 40,000 runners in the streets of Greater Manchester. Just 1 week after taking on the Brighton Marathon, Sue Tremlett completed the Manchester Marathon in 5 hours and 5 minutes. Good on her.
Perhaps I can interrupt your sports report, David, before you get onto rugby, with a shot of culture. And it says here, where Baroque composer meets Broadway flair. Ever wondered what an evening with George Gershwin, Leonard Bernstein and Antonio Vivaldi would be like? Well, next Friday, May the 8th, there will be a chance to find out at St. Michael's Church in Tynmouth, when the Teen Choral Society will, under the direction of Lana Jacobs, perform the Gloria of Antonio Vivaldi, followed by medleys from West Side Story and Porgy and Bess. Following the wonderful late Baroque Gloria of Antonio Vivaldi, the audience will be able to enjoy such 20th century standards as Tonight, Maria, and Somewhere, and Summertime, and The Living is Easy, I Got Plenty of Nuttin', and It Ain't Necessarily So. Tickets for the 7:30 p.m. concert are priced at £10, including programme and refreshments, and they're available from Ashley Way Post Office, Teen Music and Regent Style, and at the door. And another concert, the heading says venue change means the opera will go on. When balcony glass shattered at St. Gregory's Church in Dawlish, the Red Earth Opera quickly had to find an alternative venue for their planned May concert, a production of La Traviata, which takes place this weekend. The church had to be closed for safety reasons after a large panel in the balcony inside the church smashed just hours before the Easter Sunday service. But in true trooper style, the show has to go on, and now the opera group have managed to switch their production on Saturday, May the 2nd at 7 p.m. to Hope Church, which is just behind the Dawlish Sainsbury's store on the outskirts of the town. It has entailed a lot of hard work and replanning, but we were determined to go ahead, and the people of Hope Church have been very helpful, said Red Earth's musical director, Jane Anderson Brown. After months of rehearsals, our local chorus, orchestra and professional soloists have a great show to perform. People who have bought tickets for our Dawlish performance are being contacted regarding this late change of venue. We do, however, rely heavily on people who buy tickets on the day, so this message is to confirm that the performance is definitely going ahead. The production will feature two superb young singers, soprano Cecilia Zhang as Violetta and tenor Jamie Farrow as Alfredo. Also Roman Zozan as Baron Dufol and baritone Harrison Morton Deval. He's playing the role of Alfredo's father, Giorgio. Red Earth Opera will also be staging a second performance of La Traviata with chorus and orchestra at Chudley Parish Church on Sunday, May the 3rd, again at 7 p.m.
Oh, John, thank you very much for your timely Baroque and operatic intervention. And if I may say so, may I congratulate you on the pronunciation of some of those difficult artiste names. Thank you so much indeed. Well, I'm going to read a rugby report now. Teens avoid relegation in dramatic affair. But before I do so, I think it's also important to say that regarding relegation, Exeter City play a very important match in League One tomorrow. They have to win. And I have to say that even if they win, they may still be relegated to League Two, because Leighton Orient also are in a very difficult position, but have 2 points more. Now, I'm a committed Devonian, but I have to say that my loyalties this time lie with Leighton Orient, as I am actually originally from the East End of London.
Ooh. Well, come on, give it, before you go on to rugby, what do you think the chances are? Can we have a prediction? Have you read
the
team?
Yes, indeed. I think both teams will win. They've both got home matches, but I think that, therefore, Leighton Orient from the East End of London will stay in League One.
Well, if you're right, you heard it here first.
Well, thank you, John. Well, I'm moving on to the other code now. It's rugby. And a converted try from Jack Bond, who had now hung up his rugby boots, secured Dimmouth RFC a 36-34, gosh, that's exciting, isn't it? A 36-34 victory at the death in their relegation playoff clash against Cullumpton. They hosted Cully at Bitton Park on Saturday, April the 25th, and the visitors put the first 3 points on the board before Jason Jervis's unconverted try edged the hosts ahead. The fixture would continue to go back and forth in the Saturday sunshine, Cullumpton slotting another penalty to make it 5-6. An impressive kick and chase from the experienced Jack Main brought about Timber's second try, and in the clubhouse corner, no less, Luke Atkinson added the extras. Cullumpton may have struck next with 7 points of their own, but prop Matt Dowrick found himself on the wing and made no mistake in responding for the hosts. May nailed the conversion and then added a penalty to give Timothy a 22-13 lead at the turnaround. Passions were heading high into the second half, and Timothy found themselves a man down for 10 minutes as the referee got a yellow card out. Cully ate into the deficit with one converted try, and as they went in search of another, Teen's resolute defending came up trumps. Shortly after, they were celebrating a score of their own at the other end, fly half Luke Atkinson touching the ball down. A second yellow going the way of Timothy, oh dear, offered Cullumpton another route back into the battle, moving within striking distance yet again. Two converted tries flipped the script in their favour at 29-34, and with time running out, the speedy Jack Bond remained calm and crossed for a crucial try. Also keeping his cool was Jack Main, whose conversion made all the difference. I think I'm keeping my cool reading this. Almost finished. Seconds remain, and from the kick-off, Timothy kicked the ball straight out to secure the win and retain their place in the league. The Man of the Match award was shared by the whole team for their teamwork and determination, and I think I deserve a reward too for reading that.
Well, while you go for a lie down, I'll... Turn to entertainment on offer in the week ahead in Dawlish and Tynmouth. Next Tuesday, the 5th of May, that's from Tuesday the 5th to Saturday the 9th, at 7:30 p.m. at the Shaftesbury Theatre, the Dawlish Musical Theatre Company presents its latest show of The Full Monty, the Broadway musical. Tickets are £16.50 and box office is 01626 863 061. Pavilions Tynmouth offers something completely different next Tuesday at 6 p.m. The Royal Opera and Ballet streams the London production of Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin, sung in Russian with English subtitles. Tickets £17. Wednesday the 6th of May at 2 p.m. Neil Sands presents Remember When. Relive the golden days of the 1940s, 50s, 60s and 70s in a heartwarming trip down memory lane, packed with over 60 of the greatest songs ever written, from the wartime sing-alongs of Vera Lynn to the swinging hits of the Beatles, Dusty, Elvis and even ABBA. It's the music that shaped generations, with stunning costumes, unforgettable melodies, and good old-fashioned fun. This special anniversary edition is a joyous celebration of timeless entertainment. And the box office for Pavilions 01626 249 049. If a comedy-drama film is more your cup of tea, on Thursday the 7th of May at 2:30 and 7:30, Mother's Pride is showing Certificate 12A, a failing pub, a divided community, and a grieving family whose lives are changed by brewing real ale and entering the Great British Beer Awards, stars Martin Clunes. Meanwhile, some other dates for your diary. Tuesday the 5th of May, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Brixham. And also on that day, the Macular Society meet at Bitton House at 10 a.m. And also in the afternoon, Dawlish History Society meet at the Manor at 2:30. Then the following week, Monday the 11th of May, friends who support building work at All Saints Church, Kenton, have their AGM. That's at 7 o'clock for 7:30 start. And if you want more information, 01626 890 154. On Tuesday, the 12th of May, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Buckfast Abbey and the Butterfly Farm, £16.50. Their number, as always, 01626 88890. Saturday, the 16th of May, the Dawlish Garden Society have a plant sale outside the Strand Centre all morning, and there is a food fair in Dawlish, either on the lawn or in the Strand Centre. So with all sorts on offer in early May, we come to the end of today's programme. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this week's Here and Now, as I close by wishing you a delightful week ahead and a happy Bank Holiday Monday. Two Bank Holiday Mondays this month, a bit like the buses. None for a long time, and now two coming along in close succession, along with the Yellow Team, who will be here to record the news next Friday, the 8th of May. This week it's been the pleasure of the Red Team to bring to you Here and Now. Our producer is Sarah Williams, and our other readers have been Anne Hibbard, Mary King, and David Quay, with Diana Coulson overseeing copy and dispatch. So it's goodbye from them and from me, John Townsend. Until next time,
goodbye.